heard of.
Blog Talk Radio.
And maybe some of us are experiencing currently. Are you living with chronic pain? Dr. Wang is going to talk to us about what this is all about, how you can identify it, and ways to treat it holistically and medically. Dr. Wang has been a guest of ours on Recovery Recharged. He is an outstanding collaborator for me, and he has graciously agreed to appear today and talk about this subject. Before I ask Dr. Wang to begin, I just want to tell you a little bit about this man. He is an addiction medicine physician and an associate medical director at Karen Treatment Centers. He oversees detox and chronic pain programs and also oversees Karen's nursing staff. He also serves as medical director for the Grandview and Older Adult Program. He's a diplomat of the American Board of Addiction Medicine, the American Board of Anesthesiology, and the American Board of Preventative Medicine Addiction Medicine Specialty. He's a fellow of the American Society of Addiction Medicine and the Pennsylvania Society of Addiction Medicine. Dr. Wang is also a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at Penn State College of Medicine. Recovery Recharged and the Pushy Broad especially is so delighted to welcome in the new year Dr. Wang. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. Glad to be here. I'm always happy to be on your show. My pleasure.
Thank you so much. I really consider you an expert not only in the field of addiction medicine, but certainly in the field of chronic pain. So let's start very simply for all of us, because I had to learn this as well. Please begin by giving us an idea of how pain is even defined.
Today, the pain is defined as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, and or described in terms of such a damage. And that's the definition of pain as defined by the International Association of Study of Pain.
So what would differentiate normal pain from chronic pain?
There's essentially two different kinds of pain, Alan. There's acute pain and there's chronic pain. And when we think about acute pain, typically what we're describing is a discomfort secondary to a noxious stimuli due to injury or disease process, or very commonly in a post-op period, immediate post-op period. Whereas a chronic pain is a pain that persists beyond a reasonable time for healing to occur, okay? And this healing period typically could vary from anywhere from 1 month to 6 month period. And chronic pain can vary. It can be from nociceptive pain, just like acute pain. It could also be from neuropathic, or it could be a mixture of both. And the distinguishing feature of chronic pain versus acute pain is that chronic pain, one of the features is it can have a psychological component to this pain.
I see. Okay, well, we're going to talk much more about that psychological component as we move on. But I want you to give us a brief layman science lesson on how the brain experiences pain.
When pain is experienced, that typically means that in the periphery, that means whether it's the limbs, the torso, somewhere outside of the central nervous system, there's tissue damage. Okay, now we're talking about acute pain condition here.
Mm-hmm.
For example, broken bone or immediately after surgery. And the central nervous system receives a signal from this area of tissue damage. And so the central nervous system, it looks like a highway, okay, from the periphery to the brain where this information is processed. It's kind of like a two-way highway. There's afferent and efferent pathways. Afferent receives the signal from the damaged area to the brain for processing in an area called the limbic system and also the cortical area. Okay, and then the efferent refers to a signal that goes back to that area. So basically, the brain has to perceive that discomfort.
So that's where we feel it, right? I mean, we break my, I break my bone, right? I fall, I have an injury, I hurt myself. I know that it's painful because that part of the area, the nerves in that area send a message to my brain and says, oh my God, this is going to hurt, right? That's approximately how it goes. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So, and I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but is all pain real? I mean, how do I know that this just isn't in my head? Explain that to me just a little bit.
For the most part, Ellen, pain is real. Whether
okay.
it's or chronic pain. When we talk about the acute pain, that's immediately after injury, tissue injury, broken bone, it's going to hurt. After surgery, when the surgeon cuts into the tissue, it's going to hurt. Now, with the chronic pain, we may be talking about something very different. Chronic pain, like I said before, varies from anywhere from 1 month to 6 months, and it's beyond the usual course of an acute disease. And so if pain persists or even worsens after that, despite no changes in that area, then it can be something else. And it could be a psychological component to that, could be an emotional component to that, but regardless, okay, the pain is real to that person, and we must treat it as such.
Okay, all right. So what you're saying is doctors and medicine have a respect for people that come into you with chronic pain, right? So one can't just say, oh, it's all in your head, forget about it, it's really nothing. So the chronic pain definition, as you mentioned, is pain that persists for approximately maybe 6 months or more, right, and may involve not only biological situations, but psychological and social factors as well. All right, so let's say I have gone in for surgery and I am going through the normal healing process, and then all of a sudden I'm still taking pain medication, and it's 6 months to a year later. How does one determine the difference between what's in my head and what's actually physically responsible for the pain? How does that happen?
When someone has persistent pain post-op from a surgery that normally should have healed quickly and with resolution of pain for the most part, if that person is still experiencing persistent pain that's ongoing and lingering, and they are on pain medications because of that, then the other factors are in play, potentially in play here as well. Most commonly, full agonist opioids, such as morphine, Dilaudid, oxycodone, and such, are prescribed for immediate post-op pain. However, if these full agonist opioids continue to be prescribed and used by the individual, potentially the brain could adapt to that condition of having that opioid, and not only the emotional psychological component that comes with pain, but also a phenomenon called hyperalgesia could raise the perception of that pain.
That's very interesting. Okay, so let's just dial it back for a second because we want to talk about this specifically. Looking at the physical aspects of chronic pain, what happens is once you have an injury, just like you said, whether it's a sports injury or a surgical injury, physicians prescribe medication to dispel the pain. Once it goes beyond a certain point, a reasonable point of healing for the physical situation, if the pain is still persisting, one can feel that maybe the pain is no longer physical, but now psychological. And what you're also saying is that there are still medications to treat this pain, and these medications are opioid addictive medications. Is that correct?
Right. Typical full agonist opioids, the human body tends to develop tolerance to them. With prolonged pain experience, not only are we talking about potential for psychological, emotional components to be in play, but also from a physiologic standpoint, that opioid itself could potentially cause heightened pain perception, and that is a function of the area of the brain where we perceive the pain, right? It's in the midbrain, the limbic system, and the cortical area. And so the full agonist opioid, that's what we're talking about here, full agonist opioid use becomes problematic in itself, not just talking about the emotional and psychological component.
I understand. So there's a physical thing behind the agonist. Would you explain agonist for most of us that don't understand that distinction and name some of the agonist opioids again, please, so that we can recognize them?
Most of the painkillers that we're familiar with, like morphine, oxycodone, hydrocodone, Dilaudid, these are considered full agonist opioids. That means they're true opioids. They're true painkillers. And the pharmacology, the pharmacodynamics of these agents are a little different from another sort of opioids called partial agonist opioids, okay? Full agonist opioids, our body tends to develop tolerance to them rather quickly, and it comes with some unpleasant side effects if taken for too long, constipation, for example. And with development of tolerance, what we used to take that takes care of our pain doesn't seem to take care of our pain anymore unless we go up on the dose or go up on the frequency, whereas a partial agonist opioid tend not to develop tolerance to partial agonists, so we could stay on the same dose for a long time. And a partial agonist opioid, we tend not to experience as many of the typical opioid side effects.
Okay.
So that's a distinction. But most painkillers are for agonist opioids.
What? Give me an example of a partial agonist opioid.
A partial agonist opioid, a very common one these days is buprenorphine, or more commonly referred to as Suboxone, which is used extensively in opioid use disorder to serve as a maintenance for the addicted person, but also for those of us in the country who do a lot of chronic pain management, we discover that buprenorphine is actually not a bad painkiller for someone with a pain condition.
Okay. All right. So what happens here is that when you begin to manage pain, chronic pain, with agonist opioids, the problem is that you become addicted to these agonist opioids, like the opioids that you mentioned, like Dilaudid and morphine and the drugs that are used post-surgery or post-injury. And then we become addicted to those. We develop a tolerance for those things, which means that if we're taking one a day and it doesn't work, we have to take two a day and three a day and four a day, and that's where the addiction comes in. So let's just talk a little bit about something that just recently happened in the news, because it was this kind of situation that was dangerous, and people were talking about Matthew Perry and his chronic pain, and he also talked about it in his book about developing an addiction to substances, and the most recent autopsy revealed that ketamine was in his system. Is ketamine an accepted drug to treat chronic pain, Dr. Wang, in your opinion?
In my opinion, ketamine is not an appropriate agent for chronic pain management. And I'll tell you why. Ketamine is not an opioid. What ketamine is a dissociative agent, okay? It is used extensively in anesthesia. I'm a pediatric cardiac anesthesiologist, so we use ketamine quite often as an induction agent for children undergoing heart surgery. And it's referred to as a dissociative agent because what it does is it involves dissociation, involves cutting off of awareness, okay? That means that when a person is given ketamine, it dissociates the part of the brain that's responsible for awareness from the rest of him. Therefore, it appears to be a good pain medicine because the person is not aware of any peripheral discomforts. Hopefully that makes sense. And so what happens when someone receives ketamine is that they are not feeling anything, not feeling pain, not feeling emotions. They're pretty numb. That's why it makes such an ideal adjunct to general anesthesia, especially for the induction.
I see, but should not be used to treat chronic pain.
No, in my opinion, absolutely not. And because chronic pain is a complex issue to deal with, it's not just about medications. Like I mentioned before, there's psychological, emotional component to it, and therefore the treatment modality of chronic pain is very, very different from someone who's experiencing acute pain condition or someone who has a chronic pain condition secondary to cancer-related pain.
Right. So what people don't understand is that one of the foremost culprits of chronic pain are the opioids that people are taking, correct? Was that what you see at Karen? Tell us about the patients that you see.
That's right. Opioids are very commonly prescribed, not just for acute pain, but also for chronic pain conditions also. And full agonist opioids should never use long-term, especially for chronic pain conditions, unless that person has cancer pain, because it is not the treatment of choice, it is not appropriate, and it doesn't make sense.
So how do people react when you tell them that what they're taking to stop the pain is what's causing the pain?
Some people understand that, but they have no other options or are offered no other options. And some people absolutely have no idea. They're not aware that they're not supposed to take opioids for 20 years. And here at Karen Treatment Center, we take care of a lot of folks here who are on long-term prescription opioids. One population that I see the most is in the older adult population. They have a chronic pain condition, and they've been prescribed opioids for years, if not decades ago, and eventually problem occurs, okay, lots of problems. And out of desperation, the family might bring them to our facility. And we are a drug and alcohol treatment facility. We're not a hospital, and yet, individuals come to our campus for help with their chronic pain and dependency on opioids.
So you have a special department treating chronic pain, is that correct?
We do have a chronic pain program here that's multidisciplinary. Not only from a physical aspect, but also from a cognitive aspect also.
And we're going to talk about more of that for sure. So when someone comes into you and they're a chronic pain patient, what are the kinds of things that they're asked when they come in, of questions?
The first order of business always, Ellen, when someone comes in taking full agonist opioids and with chronic pain conditions, is the opioids has to go away. And so we initiate detox withdrawal management to get them off the opioids, safely and as comfortably as we can. And simultaneously, we start to implement those modalities that are known to definitively help with chronic pain condition.
When you say safely, talk to us about what the dangers are of not detoxing safely and tell us how you do it safely.
Coming off of full agonist opioids, people go through opioid withdrawal symptoms that can range from mildly uncomfortable to severely uncomfortable. And in general, opioid withdrawal is not fatal. It's uncomfortable at best. However, the only time that it may become dangerous is with someone who has complicated underlying medical issues. For example, coronary artery disease, heart disease, and if that person experiences induced stress due to opioid withdrawal, it may be dangerous for them, or someone with severe pulmonary disease. But in general, it's uncomfortable but not fatal. So what we do is we use the medicine that I mentioned earlier, buprenorphine, which is a partial agonist, for withdrawal management from opioids if they require pharmacologic assistance.
How long does that detox normally take on average? How long will it take?
What buprenorphine does is it simply masks the symptoms of opioid withdrawal. It doesn't make the process go any faster, okay? But when people are experiencing opioid withdrawal symptoms, it's very uncomfortable. They can't engage in treatment programming, and they can't engage in any of the non-pharmacologic modalities of pain management. So they would benefit from being on buprenorphine for some time, typically about 6 to 7 days, okay? And some people may require longer. Just depends on what their discomfort threshold is. Some people are very stoic. They could tolerate a lot of this physical discomfort, and some people can't. But typically about anywhere from 5 to 7 days on buprenorphine.
So, of course, you do not suggest that people try to do this on their own at home, right?
I would suggest that, and the reason for it is even if they could physically, old-fashioned term, cold turkey themselves off of the opioids, it could be very uncomfortable, and that physical discomfort as well as the mental discomfort, oftentimes people become unsuccessful in self-detox and would resume their opioid use. That's what happens.
Can you just be a little bit more descriptive when you say discomfort for those of us out there that may be thinking, I don't know what this means and I'm afraid of the pain and this is why I should go to a doctor? Describe some of the discomfort symptoms for us.
The physical discomfort from opioid withdrawal includes body aches, temperature intolerance, chills and sweats. Paresthesias, that means just pins and needle feelings on the skin. They're anxious, they're restless, they're depressed, and they can't sleep. Sleep is disturbed, and that's only the physical part of it. And then as it progresses a little bit more, you might get some GI symptoms, abdominal cramps, and then now we have full-blown diarrhea as a result of the withdrawal, and then not to speak of the mental anguish accompanying all this, because they are depressed, they're not feeling well, and they have this very intense cravings to start using opioids again to relieve all these symptoms.
So if they can get to Karen to do a healthy detox, that's wonderful. If for some reason they can't get to your services, how do you suggest they do this?
They should speak to their physician first, and if their own physician is savvy with addiction, or they are skilled in helping their patients come off of opioids safely and as comfortably as possible, that's great. If the patient is experiencing significant withdrawal symptoms and they have significant underlying medical issues, that may place them at risk for fatality perhaps, then they should seek hospital attention.
That's very good to know, and it's also good to know that Karen does this safely and also will refer out if it becomes too dangerous for you to detox, depending upon the physical symptoms of the client.
Yeah, the mere physical discomfort of opioid withdrawal, we typically don't have to send people out to the hospital for higher level care, those individuals with significant underlying medical issues and like heart disease and severe lung disease, sometimes they may have to go to the hospital for closer monitoring while they're going through the process.
Are there other ways to detox in addition to buprenorphine? Are there effective medications that can be used in in this process?
Yes. Some practitioners use the original four agonist opioids and just taper them off slowly with the original medication. For example, oxycodone, if they're taking oxycodone six times a day, they might wean with that medication to five times per day, four times per day, and maybe lower the dosage a little bit. And people have successfully come off of four agonist opioid with that strategy as well.
But that's not Karen's policy, correct?
Typically it's not, because we don't use the original medications. When people come to us, most, if not all, individuals who are using opioids are in the severe opioid use disorder category. And therefore, we want to get them off as quickly as possible, as safely and comfortably as possible, and treat the actual addiction underlying that.
Well, we have about a minute before we go to break, but I just want to ask you in general, and we're going to talk about the emotional aspect and the physiological aspect of treating and take a look at some of the holistic methods when we come back from break. And the most important thing, Doc, before we do, is there hope for treating chronic pain? Can you get better?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People with chronic pain can get better, and then we'll talk about that in the next segment. Our goal here is to improve their function and quality of life, those two things.
Great. Stay tuned. Come back to the Pushy Broad and Dr. Wang. We'll be right back.
Pushy Broad from the Bronx, New York.
You have one life to live. You want to spend it doing something you enjoy and that has meaning. If you're listening to this, then you're among the many who feel that the work they're doing is no longer a fit. My comprehensive coaching will support you and help you figure it out. I've coached hundreds of people through career transition. So visit my website today to book a free call, www.reinventing-letteru.com. When what you do matches who you are.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Carrie Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnudsenSpeaks.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
A book that actually has healing power. Introducing you to Maximize Your Healing Power by Dr. Sharon Martin, available now for pre-order. This book takes you on an empowering journey that teaches you how to have control over your own health, bridging the divide between Western medicine and shamanic practices of energy healing. Pre-order today and get a free bundle of gifts from Dr. Sharon Martin and several of her partners. For more information, visit drsharonmartin.com. Are you looking to up-level your leadership style to create greater results and have more success, but not sure where to start? Executive Coach Camilla Kahlberg can help. Recognized as one of the most inspiring coaches by EU Business News and regarded as one of the top mindset coaches in the world, she is helping clients thrive through personal and professional change. Camilla knows firsthand on what it takes to achieve what you may be missing in your life. Visit KahlbergCoaching.com for a free consultation.
From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
Welcome back, Transformation Network listeners. I'm Ellen Stewart. I'm the pushy broad from the Bronx. Happy 2024. You're here with me on my show, Recovery Recharged, with my illustrious guest, Dr. Wang from Karen Treatment Centers, and we're talking about a topic that is certainly topical, chronic pain. What is it? Is there treatment for it? Is there hope? So the doctor was talking about all of the physical symptoms of chronic pain, the fact that chronic pain is something that goes on for 6 months or more, and also has been treated by agonist opioids, and that sometimes is the problem that perpetuates the chronic pain. At Karen Foundation, they take a special look at chronic pain and how to treat it. So not only do they do detox safely and treat the existing source of the agonist opioids, but they also treat the emotional and psychological aspects of chronic pain. So, Doc, what do we mean by emotional and psychological aspects? What happens to these patients? How do they feel?
When we talk about emotional and psychological aspects of chronic pain, we must understand where this is coming from. And it's coming from a certain area in our brain called the limbic system. And the chronic pain signal, when it arrives in the brain, that's the area that's also of the brain that the signal is being processed. So if you could think of the pain signal coming to the brain and emotional signals, and they're all in that same area, kind of mixed together like a soup, so to speak. And so when a person is emotionally dysregulated, whether they're depressed, they're anxious, they're angry, any of the distorted emotions, it will heighten the perception of pain as well, because it's all in the same area. So that's the part that we do understand, those of us who treat chronic pain conditions. So when we treat someone's pain perception, we're not only treating the peripheral source of the pain, but we're also treating the central source of their pain, which is seated in the brain. And that's what I mean when I say the psychological and emotional component.
So patient comes into you, you know they're a chronic pain patient, they've been on opiates, they've gone through the detox, now they begin to do some of the work because they are no longer feeling the effects of the opioid detox for the most part. What kind of things, what kind of descriptions happen? What are they saying to you? How do you know how bad the emotional pain is? Give us some examples.
When patients come to our facility with chronic pain conditions, whether that is their primary objective to get off of painkillers and find a better option of chronic pain treatment, or they come in for substance use disorder and chronic pain happens to be one of their co-occurring issues, we always want to get to know our patients a little bit better, not just about their physical condition, their chronic pain condition, but we also want to know about their mental health history, their psychosocial history, and their trauma history and such, so that we could see the person as a whole. Because if we don't address the co-occurring issues, that could potentially raise the emotional and psychological component, then we're not helping with their chronic pain at all.
So one of the things that Karen does to treat the emotional side of chronic pain is to, what you're saying to me is improve their emotional awareness, yes? What other kinds of things do you do?
So, yes, improve their emotional awareness, but also, for example, Ellen, if someone has a past history of trauma that has never been addressed or resolved, and we must start to address that trauma issues. Many of our patients here, both men and women, for example, have sexual trauma. And if that piece of their history is not addressed or start to being treated, then that's an emotional dysregulation that potentially could contribute to heightened perception of pain. Or if they have depression and anxiety that is not treated or resolved, and that could raise the perception of pain as well. So first order of business is always for patient to understand this body-mind connection that they have. And therefore, we have a chronic pain group in addition to the rest of the program to help them understand their relationship with pain and how their brain plays a huge part of it.
So it's not only physiological, but it's emotional as well. You've explained to us that emotional pain is directly linked to chronic pain and their perception of how deep the pain goes, traumatic events, and also maybe everyday life stressors, correct? Things that make somebody anxious or sad or nervous?
That's correct. And part of the triggering pathway is not only emotional dysregulation, but it's also stressors also, which leads to emotional dysregulation, right? And so we have to help our patients understand that stress is involved not only in heightened perception of their chronic pain, but also how that might play a role in their early recovery as well. That may lead to a relapse, stressors.
Yes, the everyday things. Even if they go past that trauma and they work through that and they work through their actual physical pain, they need to learn how to manage everyday ups and downs.
That's correct.
And it doesn't take them back to trying to mask that pain with agonist opioids. I understand. I know that Karen's program on chronic pain focuses on the life stressors. You improve, like you said, the emotional awareness. You help them also overcome their fear of pain, correct?
Right. That's correct. That's part of understanding their chronic pain condition. Most people, in my experience with chronic pain conditions, they see their pain as an adversary. They're fighting their pain all the time, every day, for years. And here, we try to help them shift their perception of that pain. Rather than looking at it as an adversary all the time, we help our patient look at their chronic pain condition sort of as a partner, okay?
Explain a little more. What do you mean?
For example, if a person looks at their chronic pain condition merely as an adversary, I wake up this morning and my leg is hurting. How can I defeat my enemy today? What can I take, right? What medicine can I take? What do I have at my disposal to fight this nemesis, right? Instead of looking at the pain like that, we help our patient to shift their perspective, kind of like recovery, Ellen, to shift their perception a little bit about their pain. When someone has exacerbated pain or a pain flare-up, they should be able to stop, pause, and look at their pain. What has changed? What has changed? Did I hurt my leg? No, I did not hurt my leg today. I didn't bump my leg. What's going on with how I feel right now? Am I all jammed up on the inside? Am I anxious about something? Am I angry about something that just happened? So the patients should be able to stop and look at themselves right at that moment to see what is different, what has changed, and once they're able to identify that emotional component, then do something about it. Have a good skill set and strategy to do something about that. Again, I look at chronic pain management sort of running along a parallel track with recovery, because what makes chronic pain worse likely will make likely will impact their recovery as well.
So it does go hand in hand, which is why, and Karen, you treat both the chronic pain and the addiction as well, because they are very definitely linked. So focusing on life stressors, improving their emotional awareness, helping them overcome their fear of pain and to identify it, and to also teach them a little bit more how to communicate and how to communicate in the family. Why is that so important in treating chronic pain?
Again, chronic pain treatment is about not just one parameter. It's multiple parameters. Anything that potentially could dysregulate a person, okay, should be looked at by that individual, whether it's past trauma and resolve, whether it's mental health, or, you know, what you're referring to might be that psychosocial piece with a family interaction. If there is family discord and the patient is leaving to go home to a very disruptive family dynamic, chances are pretty good if that patient has chronic pain conditions, it's going to flare up because of that emotional stressors in that type of environment. And again, goes hand in hand with recovery. You know, if someone who completed treatment here and is in their early sobriety and they go home to that disrupted environment, they are under stress, emotionally dysregulated, chances are high that they will relapse.
All right. So it is a full cycle approach to treating chronic pain from the emotional standpoint. Now, let's talk about the non-pharmacological approaches to treat chronic pain that you do in lieu of medication. And Karen, give us some of the key components of what that looks like.
Yeah, now we have talked a lot about opioids, the full agonist opioids, partial agonist opioids, not to say that all medications are not appropriate in chronic pain management, because there are some medications that's been found to be very helpful. And obviously, coming from us, they are non-habit-forming, non-addictive medications. And then there's a whole slew of non-pharmacologic modalities of pain management. And on top of the list, this is the number one priority that I order for virtually everyone with chronic pain condition, is physical therapy, okay? In other words, movement and activity. And people with chronic pain conditions and with substance use disorder on top of that typically are not very active. And some people are downright sedentary, especially people with pain condition. Because of pain, they don't want to move, which exacerbates a pain, and they don't want to move even more. And it's a vicious cycle. So first order of business is always movement. Motion is lotion.
And how did Karen accommodate that?
Well, first we enrolled them in physical therapy, and our physical therapy here is perhaps a more accurate description of our physical therapy here is functional therapy, okay, to get people moving, to recondition certain muscle sets and to strengthen, because with some of the most common pain conditions that involves bony structures and the spine, like low back pain, for example, typically the muscular support to the bony structure is deficient. It is not strong enough to support the structure. Stronger it is, more support they get, and better they'll feel. And from physical therapy, once they get a little bit more reconditioned and stronger, then they could work with our trainers at the gym and just start to become more and more active. So movement is always number one, and medical massage is always is another modality that's very helpful for chronic pain condition. Again, it speaks to muscle contractions and tightness, typically asymmetric. That means one side, muscles on one side of the body is going to be more conditioned than the other side and tighter, okay? And so medical massage works to kind of loosen up the musculature a little bit. And we also have acupuncture performed by a very skilled physician here we have, and that has been found to be extremely helpful for all sorts of chronic pain conditions as well.
And what about neuromodulation stimulators? What are those?
Neuromodulation is appropriate for some people and not for others. And what these devices are, they are electrical stimulations. That's not the same as what most people are familiar with, which is the TENS unit. Okay, the neuromodulation unit that we use here at Karen, they're electrical stimulations that simulates the painful area with alternating current. That's like the wall current, okay, but it's safe. It's safe, and it will not electrocute anyone.
Okay. Good to know.
What it does is a couple of things. It works to relax the musculature that it is stimulating. Again, it's kind of like an electrical medical massage, okay? And after our muscle's been stimulated by electricity, it tends to go into what's called latency period, okay? That means the musculature just kind of relax. And that is helpful for people with very, very tight musculature that contribute to that pain. And the other thing that the neuromodulation unit does is it sort of disrupts the pain signal from the affected area to the brain. We talked about that body-brain communication earlier, that two-way highway, and neuromodulation device kind of disrupts that highway a little bit. And so people do find this device very helpful.
So, again, you work in a specific way by giving your clients not only medication when they need it, but by helping them emotionally and then, of course, non-pharmacologically. If they are not able to get to you, then this is the best time of year, especially in the beginning when we have all these New Year's resolutions, right? Movement is key. So if they're working with a doctor and you're tapering because you have chronic pain or you have gone through a detox or you want to begin to lessen the pain, a gym or movement or massage, physical therapy, medical massage, acupuncture, all of these things will help tremendously. And what about overall wellness, Dr. Wang? How do we improve that in order to help chronic pain?
Overall wellness certainly is very, very important, not just from appropriate medications for their chronic pain, but also from a non-pharmacological modality that we just talked about, but also healthy diet and lifestyle. And we know that healthy diet, it is helpful for people with chronic pain conditions to avoid certain types of unhealthy processed foods, and certainly we encourage that also. And we have our chronic pain patients, if their diet is horrendous because as part of their substance use disorder, we do have them meet with our certified dietitian to review their diet and offer suggestions of what they probably should be eating here.
Those are very big suggestions for all of us and the kinds of things that will seriously help minimizing the pain, not only emotionally but physically. So on the whole, you've created this wonderful program. What is your hope? What's the end goal in managing chronic pain?
There's really no end goal, Ellen, but there's goals, okay? Let me put it this way, Ellen. The goal of any chronic pain management is always to improve their function and to improve their quality of life, okay? So by saying that, you notice that I did not mention how little or how much pain the person has, because that is not the focus here, okay? The focus of our chronic pain program is not to reduce the person's perceived pain from 8 to 9 out of 10 to a 1 out of 10. That is never the goal. Okay, now if that happens, that's great for the person, but the goal is always to improve their function and quality of life, whatever level of pain they leave here with, okay? And our experience here at Karen is that most people with chronic pain conditions leave here with either very little pain or virtually no pain. And certainly they could report that their function and their quality of life just within the several weeks that they've been here, they could see that it has much improved. So function and quality of life.
Function and quality of life. That's absolutely fantastic. And your success rate seems to be very high. Give us an example of maybe one or two people that have walked in with serious situations and have left you in a much better frame. Just a couple of examples for us.
One individual that always comes to mind because he had a dramatic improvement as an older adult that we had here a number of years ago who came in. He was prescribed opioids, full agonist opioids, by his physician. And this is a very, very kind, compassionate doctor who was doing the best she could. And in the end, he came to us because problems were happening. Emergency room visit after emergency room visits. And there seemed to be no solution out there. So his daughter brought him to us. And again, I put him through a series of modalities that we have discussed, got him off of his full agonist opioid and enrolled him in physical therapy, massage. And one of the things that we did not talk about, Ellen, is that I mentioned that some medications are appropriate and helpful. The goal is to have better function and quality of life. So this is an older individual, about 80 years old, I believe, when he first came here. And he was non-functional and barely walk. And during the process of getting him off of his full agonist prescription opioids, I used buprenorphine, okay? But what I did was I left him on a small dose of buprenorphine as a pain medicine, okay? And because this individual, he wants to get back to his family and enjoy the rest of his life. And so he did very well on small doses of buprenorphine that was not causing any issues. And by the time he left here, he was walking without assistive devices, cane, walker, nothing at all, and was able to enjoy his grandkids. And he passed away about a few years later from a heart disease. But during the period of time that he did have, his family reported that they thoroughly enjoyed him.
Yeah, that's really interesting because not only did he thoroughly enjoy life, but his family got to thoroughly enjoy him. And that's really wonderful. Okay, so we just have a very short amount of time. Leave us a message for 2024. What do you want our listeners to know about the hope in treating chronic pain?
There is hope for people with chronic pain conditions. And it's not a hopeless situation. It can be treated by the right methods, by the right physicians and the right facilities. So don't give up hope.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being with us. I sincerely appreciate it. Dr. Wang is a constant contributor for us here at Recovery. CARON.org, a very world-renowned treatment center here in the United States, caron.org. You can read about their chronic pain program, and if it's for you, please go. The Pushy Broad from the Bronx is always here for you. Recovery Recharged happens on a regular basis. Please go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com. Sign up for a free session if you want to start the new year off right, or call me at 800-889-1757. I am here to help you. Thank you so much. Let's ring in the new year a bigger and better and brighter you. See you next. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. And remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, New York.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the hosts of this program and not KKNW. This is 1150 AM KKNW Seattle and KPNW 98.9 FM HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday morning to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your alternative talk AM 1150 traffic update. For around the sound, we have a recent collision on State Route 108 eastbound at milepost 5. The roadway has been fully blocked. TOT crews and State Patrol have been dispatched to scene to take care of that collision.
NBC News Radio, I'm Michael Kastner. Four people are dead in the southeast after extreme weather hit the region. Local reports say a man in Birmingham, Alabama, was crushed to death by a falling tree, and an 81-year-old woman was killed in southern Alabama when her mobile home was lifted off its foundation. One person died in North Carolina when a severe storm rolled through a mobile home park. A federal appeals court is considering whether Donald Trump is immune from prosecution on charges he illegally tried to overturn the 2020 election. More from Mark Mayfield.
During a hearing on Tuesday, appeals court judge Florence Pan asked a Trump lawyer whether a president would be immune for having taken a bribe or ordering SEAL Team 6 to murder a political rival. Trump lawyer Dijon Sauer said a president would need to be impeached and convicted first. Sauer argued Trump has immunity in the case because he was acting in his capacity as president. Prosecutors urged the court to reject Trump's effort to dismiss the case.
Michael Kastner, NBC News Radio.
A Better Life with Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
You know, if you're looking to lose weight, they say it's best to exercise in the morning. That's according to a new study out of China, and it's in line with a lot of previous research. Planning to work out in the morning means...